Okay, so welcome to Friday the 27th of March live call. As always, I put up here, I am here to help. So contact details, as always, please do get in touch. So today we just want to run through some quick updates and then we're going to go straight on to running technique part two. And then if you've got any questions, we didn't have any questions sent in today. So if you have any questions following this, then I will obviously happily answer them. Or if you're watching it on the replay, if you have any questions following it, contact me and I can then build them in for the next one. So updates, feedback forms. So hopefully everyone got the email and saw the Facebook post about feedback forms. I did get a couple of them in. It would be really, really good to get those back in because that's going to help shape the membership as it goes forwards. Because now we're in, what is it, month seven into the membership now. And it would just be great. A couple that I've had in have been quite interesting. And that's kind of almost what I expected from them. So it's just interesting. That's going to that will shape the membership. And there's some exciting stuff on that. More questions would be really helpful because I can only provide content and help you if I know what it is I need to help you with. So that's really important as well. Okay. And what I'd love to do, and that was one of the things that came in, one of the feedback forms was to make the live course more interactive. So more workshop based. And again, that's what they were always intended to be. It was intended to be one workshop based live call and a month, plus also one questions a month. But for that to happen, I need people to be here. Because it's very difficult to run a workshop either by myself or with just Erica. So it's quite hard. So that makes it then more into a kind of presentation lecture type thing, which I know some of you enjoy, but some of you would like it more to be interactive, which is how I originally had designed it. So you need to turn up. With that, I will look at doing maybe another evening of the week, because I know Fridays are very difficult for people, so maybe a Sunday will work better. But we can kind of look at that as we go forwards. Really exciting news is both NeuroActive and the NeuroActive Method are now registered trademarks. So that's really cool. So it's a little bit of protection on the intellectual property there. Also, these are the systems that underline Runner by Design. So the whole of the new Runner by Design process, which I'm in the middle of doing, is all written around the NeuroActive Method. And because the benefit you have as founding members is that you get access to me on a coaching perspective, I follow the NeuroActive Method, and actually it's been part of this membership that's really helped me redefine that process. Okay, so that's when you say to me, yeah, this is where I am, this is my goal, this is where I want to get to, that's the process I follow. So it's a proven process, it works, and it's flexible enough to fit the completely unpredictable nature of neurology and running in by itself. So Runner by Design, updated process design, and this is coming on really well at the moment. Okay, so it's in active development. So to give you a bit of a sneak preview, I don't know if you can see that, if it's big enough. But basically, this was always kind of the plan for Runner by Design anyway, because when you first join the membership, you get put into a category, and the idea was we then point you towards the content that you need to do. This is even more intelligent. This is kind of what I've been really wanting to do for quite a while. So basically, you come in, you come into your entry point, and it doesn't matter how long you've been a member for. You put in what your goal is. So there's some wizard-like questions that'll ask you. So what do you want to improve? What do you think is stopping you? Okay, and it's some answers that you multiple choice answers that you choose from. We can refine that over time. There's you answer them some questions about your current running. You know, how long into run do you break down, if that's the part of the problem, what's your stability like, confidence, breathing, all that kind of stuff. And we kind of go through that. Then you go through an identify phase, which is the current gait analysis app, where you do the cerebellum stuff and you do the eye movement stuff and you do the walking gait stuff. That will at some point be rewritten to being a better app, but at the moment it will kind of do for now. And then what the system does, it takes all of this, then it builds what I've called an expression map. Okay, so that expression map coming from expression under load. So how are you expressing the skills that you have? And I've kind of said the four most important ones, I think, for running are coordination, predictive mapping, tone regulation, which is muscle tone or tissue tone, as opposed to singing tone, and breathing. Okay. And so you'll get basically a score, and then you'll get a visual representation of that score. And then this is what you're looking to improve. So it then uses this to basically give you a drill stack. Okay. And it does that on an 8-week, what I call an 8-week spine. So 8 weeks, it's kind of predicted it a little bit ahead in 8 weeks. And then it's come back and given you a 2-week exercise stack. So it says for the next 2 weeks, do these exercises. So you do the exercises and then you come back in and then you take a little bit of a reassessment. And then you say, and ask you some questions about, you know, improvements, all the rest of it. If it hasn't improved, it'll do some slight alterations and stick you back in that 2-week cycle. If it has, then you progress on to the next 2-week cycle. And you do that up until you get to 8 weeks. Once you get to 8 weeks, it then says, well, have you reached a goal? And if you haven't, fine. We just plug it back into another 8-week cycle based on where you are now. Okay. If you have reached a goal, great. Then you just plug in your next goal and away you go. So the idea is you can keep on progressing, whatever it is. At the moment, it's written for performance as opposed to pain, only because pain's a bit more complicated. So I'm the interaction with pain still in that respect. I will write, there will be the pain version of it, but it's just a little bit more complicated. And to show you that it does actually exist, I am going to switch over to this tab here. So this is the current working version. Okay, this is, it's test data, but it is real data that's in there. So this is like the dashboard that you go into, and you've got the dashboard of, you know, where you are right now. You've got what phase you're in the neuroactive model. So you've got identify, clean, train, integrate, strengthen. So that you're in the clean phase here, focuses on predictive mapping. Okay, so we know that the brain predicts a moment ahead. So we need to have that bit sorted out properly so we don't fall over on a run because your predictive model is better. Your next retest date is here, and you've got, you know, what your stack is here. If you don't have a current stack, it would say go and do your finish off your assessment, and then we can give you an exercise stack. You can see what the cycle details are, so the primary goal, what the primary goal is, what your perceived blocker is, heaviness and loss of rhythm under load. It could be anything, but this is just test data. And then you can see how the expression map is then displayed in terms of where you currently are. And then you've got your drills. And the next, for the next 2 weeks, the drills you do are this. And if you click on a drill, it'll come up and give you a description of it. It's obviously in dev mode, so it doesn't look very pretty. It'll look a lot better, and it's test data that's in it. And then you would kind of follow that, and then you would kind of update the system, and then it'll give you next, you know, it will keep you on track. So that is in active current development as we speak, which is, I think, is quite exciting because it's where I've always wanted it to be. And from the feedback I have from the forms that I've had come back, that's probably where you guys want it as well. If you just want to know what to do, plug in your goal, plug in what you think is stopping you. The assessment will pick up some of the areas that are not that the system thinks based on, obviously, this is how I work with my one-to-ones anyways. It's all based on how I work, so why it's taken so long to get to this point, because trying to distill that down into meaningful, practical applications quite difficult. But I think we're kind of there with it in a version one form. And I'm obviously always here to then pick it up. So I think it's really exciting. I think that will give you a focus point. And even if the progress is not as quick as I could do it in my one-to-ones, you've always got me here as a backup to say, you know, this needs a bit of a tweak or whatever it might be. You know, I think that's quite good. So that's quite cool. Do you have any questions about that?
No, that all sounds really interesting. I'm very much, looking forward to giving it a try, especially on the pain side of things, because I feel like that's really more for me rather than performance. It's definitely looking really good.
But in terms of technique, so when I say performance, anything that's not pain, basically. So mm-hmm. If your goal is to improve your technique, mm-hmm. it fits into this cycle as well.
Okay, that's good.
Okay, so it's either, of course, you can start with pain, just whatever your priority goal is. Mm-hmm. And pain at the moment, you just do your assessments and start that dialogue. and I take you through this cycle anyway. That's the cycle that I use. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I've got a little bit more intelligence than the system would have. That's why I'm not doing it with pain at the moment, because I think it needs a little bit more care. Not that it's not got care, but it needs to be slightly more nuanced, I think, for pain.
Okay.
Just because the way the pain works. But that is the cycle I would use with you anyway. So that's what I'm here for. So use me.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Will do. Thank you.
Cool. Okay. So running technique part two. So quick recap on what we covered in the last live call. So we covered the why we're classed as being the four main markers of good running technique, as far as I'm concerned. So we have this relaxed upright posture, we have high cycling heels, we have driving from smooth, powerful and stable hips, and we have running from the lower body, shaping from the upper body. Okay, so that's our main markers that we're looking for. Everything outside of that is personal movement strategy. Okay, and there are lots of reasons. This is why I don't go into angles particularly. I don't go into lots of the stuff that a lot of biomechanics based coaches would do. And a lot of coaches who have kind of learned a very traditional way of doing this, because really everyone moves differently. And so this is the four markers that I would use. Takeaways from the last call was running technique is an output from the system, and therefore we have a lot of influence over it if we look at the inputs. So we clear up the system deficits first. Okay, so we look at visual, vestibular, proprioceptive integration between those systems. We assess and train for capacity. If it's needed, if you need more capacity, okay? So we look at the ABCs of athletics, agility, balance, coordination, and then we look at accuracy and stability, of which we've got reflexive stability and we've got contra stability as well. Okay, so we assess and train for all of these things, and that's currently what that tool does anyway. And then we look at individual skills for technique elements. So some of the things we looked at was cadence and bits and pieces. And then we assess and train your ability to access that capacity under load, which is really where my specialism is. Okay, expression under load. So it's all right having it in a static situation, but can you access it at marshal point 5 of park run? And you know, that's what's more important than being able to access it, you know, in the gym or in a kind of training environment. Okay, so we need to do some specific training to that. So last time we covered posture, and I think we covered that quite comprehensively, and it would be my number one is to get people to have nice, helpful posture with running, because that also then helps things like high cycling heels, which will be the focus of today's or this evening's live call. Okay, so high cycling heels, as you can see in the picture, there is no such thing as a high cycling heel in that photograph. But if you go to parkrun tomorrow morning, you will see that an awful lot of the parkrunners out there will have heels like this, which is partly why they get so excited about flying feet, which has always made me laugh since I've ever started doing workshops right back in 2017-18. And that's because flying feet should be normal. That should be the absolute normal. It shouldn't be something that you get excited about because the photographer happens to have caught you with both feet off the ground. Okay, as a bit of a happy accident. Okay, I know that's slightly scathing, but the point is that this technique is very inefficient for a number of different reasons. Okay, so if you have no flight time between, one is you're never having a recovery phase, so your muscles are always under some kind of load all the time. You can try and offset that load by having a very high cadence, but then you have a very high cadence with very low feet. You can't put any propulsion into it. So from a performance perspective, it's really poor. You're pretty much always going to be overstriding because you've never got room for your legs to extend and come back. You're always going to be braking because you're always going to be having your leg going forwards when you hit the ground, never coming back. It's just not a good way to run. Okay. It's a good way to walk, but it's not a good way to run. So instead, what do we need? Talk about the phases that we go through when we go through the gait cycle. So when you're foot comes down to the ground, you have this load phase, and then all your tissues store all that energy. Then when you go to toe off, you release all that energy, so you've got forward propulsion. Then you have a recover phase. And if we look at it in terms of, if we split it down to what you would normally see, you'd see foot strike, you'd see mid stance, you'd see propulsion, you'd see toe off, and you'd see heel lift and recovery phase. They're the kind of five phases that you would normally go through. And each one of those phases has a different type of skill requirements. So if we concentrate on the left leg,
yeah.
So we see we've got as the foot comes down, load phase.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have store. And as the leg goes underneath, we're starting to release it. And then as it toe off, we've got recovery phase.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But you can see that from a timing perspective, it's all pretty rhythmic. It's all pretty relaxed, apart from the weird arm. But you can see that where it's landing is fairly close to the center of mass.
Mm-hmm.
And landing more whole foot, slightly missing out the heel, but it's landing more sort of whole foot on there.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to think about what skills do you need to be able to do that, what kind of things do you think?
Control and I would say balance. To really have that that foot not I don't know what the technical terms are, but like falling into itself or like standing on the outside of the foot. And you need good your knee is working very well in the knee working department, in as much as it's doing a knee thing, it's going together and apart. I'm not doing very good words here. But also your ankle is keeping everything stable. Anything else from the technical side of this department?
I think what surprises me is you're not reaching forwards. Like you said, you're landing center mass. And I was expected that you would be potentially like leaning forward a little bit and reaching forward with your leg. But it looks, like you said, a lot more relaxed.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could slow it down a bit, you'd see I could draw a line down there. And it is ahead of the body, and it kind of needs to be a little bit. Try to time it so on this screen here so we can see. It's a bit hard to get it exactly right. So you shouldn't be reaching forwards at all. And that is a mistake that a lot of runners make.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can see that in that scissor gait from before is they do reach forwards. And because they're reaching forwards, they then have to lean forwards with their body because it then feeds into itself. If you've got a forward posture, you're probably more likely to overstride to stop yourself falling on your face. But also if you overstride, you're probably going to go over slightly to try and reduce the impact. Because that's quite a big loading thing. When you kind of, I don't know if you can see this on my screen now.
Mm-hmm.
If I can maybe do it a little bit slow motion. Step by step, as you come through and load, that's not quite, it's just ahead of the center of mass. Mm-hmm. But interestingly, you want to watch the leg is coming back when it lands. Okay, it's coming back when it lands. If you are doing that scissor gait, you're going forwards when you land, so that's a big break, thing. Okay, it's a real shame that I can't share both of these together because, let's see if I can just do it again. Now that it's just browser. It's not doing it, is it? No, okay. It thinks it's doing it, it's not for some reason. And then it does this whole thing where it's not going to share it again. Okay. Why it suddenly started doing that? I need to report that. Right, I'm just going to, it might kick me out. Okay, I'm going to is really just, sorry, it's just so frustrating. I'd have to, because I was going to talk you through how this actually works in terms of the position of the foot at each part. So it's really annoying I can't actually do that. So I apologise for that.
It's okay, it's all right. Technology, it's fine. We had a way around it, so...
So the way to do this, I suppose, if you could do it yourself, is if you just grab... Oh, you probably can't see both. But if you can grab the bar on the video, you can do it kind of step by step.
Mm-hmm.
So foot strike, obviously, when it hits the ground. What we're looking for is landing slightly ahead of the centre of mass.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking for rear foot, midfoot, forefoot. Okay, so the same as walking. So it's same as that scissor gait. The difference is that leg's coming backwards and you're just missing out the heel. So what you actually get is you're landing more whole foot rather than with a steep heel on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Then we have what we find at this particular point when you first hit the ground, there's a big spike in the vertical ground reaction forces, which basically means that the force that you're putting into the ground, there's always an equal and opposite force coming back up, minus whatever's absorbed by the surface, in this case, the treadmill, a little bit by the shoe as well. So you've got to be able to handle those forces that comes up. The passive structures of the foot absorb those forces first. So things like the fat pads around the foot, and then you have active muscles and the active tissue that then starts to absorb it through eccentric loading. So basically you think about it as a stiff spring. Mm-hmm. As you hit the ground and the forces are coming back up towards you, you've got to control that coming in. And the muscles that tend to do it is the shin. So when you said the ankle controls a foot, you're right, but also the tibialis anterior, the shin muscle, that really controls the foot because that controls the foot positioning. That's why it's so important to train the shin muscle, but very rarely people do. Okay, but that takes a lot of the tension there. We have the quadriceps, so we've got the thighs that are controlling the knee flexion. So if you go through that video, you see that my knee flexes slightly, but not very much at the point of impact. What happens when people get tired is that knee flexion gets worse. Okay, so they bob up and down a lot more because I'm not able to handle that force of the coming through in the knee. And then we have the glutes, particularly the glute medius and glute minimus on the side. They help to stabilize and stop the hip coming out laterally when you're standing on one leg. Okay. So then we have mid stance. So you advance the video slightly further forward. So the foot is now kind of coming a little bit underneath at that point. You'll see that the body weight is starting to move over the foot. And I do have a particularly upright posture. In this, I always felt it's better to run more upright than leaning forwards, unless you're leaning forwards from the ankles. Your knee flexes a little bit more than it does at the initial foot strike position. And you'll see it flexes a little bit more as it starts to take some more of that load as the body goes across the top of it. And then the hip, whilst it's started off in a flex position, as it comes down and through, it's now moving towards extension. We have eccentric loading still dominating, so you're still resisting the forces in this spring-like motion, okay, but it's starting to transition ever so slightly. The muscles are absorbing, so we're in this load phase, so that's loading all that energy up. So you've got the quads that are controlling that knee flexion again. We've got the glute max now, so the glute max at the back, that's now controlling the hip, stabilizing it, getting it ready to transition across into propulsion. And we have the calves are now starting to get some more loading as well. Also in mid-stance, and you can kind of think about it, mid-stance phase two or part two, if you like. You're now directly over the foot. This is the peak loading movement. So when you talk about balance and stability, this is exactly where it needs to happen the most at this particular point, because this is where all the loading is. And this is where you see that hip collapse coming in, where you get they can't. The integration between the core muscles, so the abs muscles, if you like, all that core corset and the glute medius and glute minimus complex don't talk to each other properly. So you have a hip collapse that goes on. Okay. This is in terms of maximums ground contact force. Okay. So peak loading, maximum ground contact force, maximum joint loading in the hip, knee and ankle. Okay, so thinking about what you need to have to be able to handle these forces. And then we're starting to transition now from eccentric loading, this compression type loading, into concentric loading. So now we're actually contracting the muscles to start to add propulsion. So concentric muscle, if you took a bicep and you were to contract like this, is concentric. So what we're doing with the glute max in particular is it's making the hip going into extension through that contraction there. And then with the heart, with the calves, they're starting to load, they're starting to contract as the foot is starting to plant our flex, point down towards the ground more as we're going over the body. And then we start to see a little bit of a heel rise. So as the heel rises, the body moves ahead of the foot. This is all happening all kind of at the same time. Is, and I can probably, let's do a little bit on this one. That one there, let's see. So we go through foot strike, mid stance one, mid stance two, and now we're kind of at this propulsion phase where we are coming through this bit here. And so we're sort of transitioning, we get a much more muscular contraction in the glutes, a little bit in the hamstrings and the calves, and the muscles kind of the foot. We're starting to release all that energy, and we're going from this eccentric mode, we're now pretty much in concentric, and we've got the soleus, which is a huge contributor to propulsion. So the soleus muscle is the one that's underneath, that goes from the Achilles tendon up, and the gastroc is the bigger one that's over the top, the one you normally class as your calf muscle. That's that one over there. Okay. And then we have glute max. This is putting it into hip extension. We have the hamstring assisting, and then we have the foot. So we've got the arch recoil. Okay, this is why it's really important to do things like ankle tilts, because we're helping to map out where the foot arches and the ankles are, so that we can get this elastic recoil. Okay, so we've then moved to high cycling heels in the toe off phase. We're going to go to that bit there. So it's from this bit here up to this bit here. Okay, so this is the phase we're in. So we're kind of toe off phase. So this is final contact with the ground, be the forefoot and the toes. So the ankle is reaching plantar flexion, so the foot is now doing this. So we've now got a really contracted calf muscle. We have the energy transfer from the ankle into forward motion. We have the gastroc is working really hard to contract and release that energy, particularly when the toe comes off the ground. And then we have the big toe, which is stabilizing and assisting the force transfer. So if you have issues with your big toe, which I know a couple of people in the membership have challenges there, so I'm working with them to sort that out. It does impact on your stability and your ability to transfer force, because what then happens is you tend to take it more up the glute. Okay, then we have the heel recovery phase, which is this bit up here. And we're going this phase here from that point there up to here. So we have the foot that leaves the ground. We have the heel lifts towards the glute, so we get a hamstring contraction in there. We get the knee that flexes rapidly to this kind of greater than 90 degrees angle. We have the hip flexors that are starting to initiate this forward swing. Okay, so we have the initiating forward swing here, this bit here. And we have the passive recoil from the tendons and the fascia, which helps you to get the high heels in the first place. So this is not me consciously pulling this up. This is all about elastic recoil, rebound, and that's pulling it up and through from there. Okay, so if I can, so this is Ross, let's see if I can, oh, you're on that full screen, let's just make this a little bit bigger so I can step through this a little bit. We can come through the different phases as we go through. Okay, so what I'll also just exit from that, because we do have one. From the back angle, So you got to excuse the gammy arm, yeah.
Oh, okay, now I can't see that one now.
Oh, can you not see this? Oh, hang on.
I've got the presentation. Yeah.
Sorry, there you go. Can you get it?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you.
Okay, so if I just step through this, you can see if we concentrate on the left leg again,
mm-hmm.
we can see it's not as clear to see in this, is it? We can see the calf at this point, the calf is quite relaxed here.
Mm-hmm.
Then as we come down and then we load, and you can see it's starting now to contract as it's starting to restore all that energy ready for release. And then it releases up and through. Okay, we can see the foot is landing pretty well. Now, if we look at the hips, what we can see, this hip collapse I was talking about. So in here, my hip complex on this side is not talking as well to the abs on this side, so the core on this side. These two need to talk better to pull this side up. This mm-hmm. is losing stability. Whereas on the other side, actually, it's better. It's not as profound. It's much better. That's much more controlled. Still a bit of a drop, it's a bit of a rotation on that side.
Mm-hmm.
Some of this is to do with the shoulder break and all kind of stuff. But the reason why this arm is hanging out like this is because of that stability on this side. So as I land on this side, it's got to stabilize. So it comes out to stabilize here. And you'll see that's quite common. Mm-hmm. If people have got hip collapse, their arms will go out to try and stabilize.
Yeah, I definitely feel like my hips do collapse, probably both sides, to be fair. I am struggling with hip pain on particularly my left at the moment. So I'm fairly sure that if I had those markers, if we did this with me, I'd be all over the joint.
Yeah. And so what this tells me, what that would tell me then is something isn't right either with balance
mm-hmm.
or it's not right with that control across mm-hmm. across there. Now, if I was going the traditional biomechanics route, which is what this was actually done at the running school up in London, mm-hmm. They were looking at they are a bit neuro, but they're mainly running mechanics. They would go, yeah, that's you've got to do hip strength work, you've got to do core strength work, and that's mm-hmm. the way they approach it. I would approach it slightly different these days. I would go, okay, what sorts of things are is stopping me from doing that? So before we proceed with the I'm telling you, so you mentioned balance before. What other things could you think of that would, from everything you know about how I work particularly, what other things can you think of that would maybe contribute, or you would need to have good skills in to be able to do that?
So there's the word that begins with P, and I want to call it prep something, but I can't remember. Yeah.
So
a good brain mapping as well.
Yes. Super important. Super, super important. That mapping. Very, very important. And the proprioceptive stuff, and they go hand in hand. And also motor control.
Mm-hmm.
Accuracy, timing, all of these things to be able to make that happen. So purely from a kind of an output perspective, we need good loading. We need effective stiffness. So we need to be able to handle those forces, that big spring, we need to handle those forces as it comes down. We need efficient propulsion so we can move forwards. So from a good loading perspective, we need good foot placement, kind of what you were saying there. Foot needs to be in the right place and it needs to be controlled. And from an effective stiffness perspective, we need the fascial tissue to be aligned. So if we think about what a lot of people's fascial tissue is like, if you think of fascial tissue as in kind of springs on its side, zigzaggy lines on its side, most people's are all over the place. It's like a hash kind of formation. We actually want them to be nicely stacked on top of each other. So when we're having a spring, it can handle it all properly. And that's what we really need. And there's some effective ways of doing that. We need tendon stiffness. And this is one of the things that is much better now. But in rehab, if you had a painful Achilles tendon or other tendon, they would always get you to stretch. And actually, tendons like being loaded. They like being loaded because they like to be stiff. Stiffness is a property of a tendon. It does not like being stretched. Okay. So that has changed in some respects. It also hasn't changed in a lot of respects. But we also need this balance of tension and relaxation. So in that video, I'm relatively relaxed and relatively smooth as I'm running. wasn't a lot of tension there. Head's maybe a little bit far forward. There's a bit of tension in the shoulders. I'm holding that arm up. But other than that, it's fairly relaxed. Most of the work is happening from below the waist, from pelvis and down. Okay, and that's what we want to see. So from an efficiency of propulsion perspective, we need to be able to release those stored forces. So we need to be able to store them in the first place. And if you're having that scissor gait, you're not doing that at all, really, or minimally. I need to have good timing to be able to do that. So we can look at this from a couple of different perspectives. So from a physiology perspective, okay, a physical perspective, we need the muscles and the other tissues to be able to absorb the forces. We need them to be able to store that energy, and we need to be able them to be able to release that energy. Okay, therefore, we need elasticity. So if you're looking at a physical property, what do we need? We need elasticity. Some of the skills we need, actual foot placement, motor control, joint control, both around a single joint. So you think about all the joints in the foot, we need control of those ideally, but a bit of toe yoga. But we need ankle, hip, knee, and well, up the back as well, and shoulder. But you also need it coordinated across that whole chain. Okay. And for me, the coordinated parts, possibly more important. Individual joint control is important, because what happens is you then compensate for it, but having fluidity across them is maybe just as important, if you like. You need good balance, as you kind of said, and we need stability. And I split them out differently, because stability and balance aren't necessarily the same thing. You can have balance, because let's face it, anyone who runs is other than when you have slight mishaps, but anyone who runs tends to be able to go from one leg to the other. But stability is a very different thing. A lack of stability is why people get injured, why they can't perform, because their joints aren't being stabilized enough. Okay, and that's why we see that hip collapse. That's why we see lateral hip shifting. That's why these two things primarily are why we see people with a scissor gait in the first place. Because if you do not have these things, your brain will not let you have high cycling heels, because it will deem it unsafe for you to be high up on a single leg at speed with all these forces acting. So it goes, nope, you're going to keep your feet low, because at least you've got another foot on the ground that never really leaves it. But the problem with that, it's a trip hazard. And most of the people that fall over on trail that I've seen, or slip off a curb and do it, it's all because their feet are very low.
Mm.
You know, it's not because they're, you know, and that is the primary reason for it. And of course, we need to integrate all of these things. And all that leads to nice movement fluidity, which is obviously what we need. Now, if we put it through a neuroactive lens, well, we need strong cerebellum function, because cerebellum, motor control, accuracy, error checking, and timing. So pretty much everything you need to have good balance and stability. Okay, this is why I'm so hot on the cerebellum for runners. I really am, because it is so, so important to be able to train that. And you know, all of that content is in the Runner by Design membership. There's a whole section on the cerebellum and what it likes in terms of variations and some of the exercises that you can use both in a training environment and also when you're running. So it's all there. We need that clear joint mapping, as you say. So you can kind of think of it a little bit like setting up Face ID on your phone, or thumb ID for the older phones, is that if it's not complete, then it won't unlock your phone. And it's exactly the same. If your brain doesn't know or have a full picture of your ankle, of your knee, of your hip, or of your big toe, then it cannot use it properly. It cannot unlock, express, if you like, the capacity that might be held within that area. It simply can't do it. And so joint mapping is very, very important. Again, this is all in the Runner by Design courses. There's a whole course on joint mapping and body mapping. So we need systems competency. Okay, so we need your visual system, your vestibular system, and your proprioceptive system to be working. And it's great to hear that you are wearing your lenses.
Yeah.
And so do you find overall that's helped?
I think I am now running more with them. Like, I tend to wear my contacts like all the weekends, both Saturdays and Sundays. And so when I do a run, either at parkrun or like I'm tending to volunteer at parkrun and then doing a run separately afterwards, just so there's not the pressure of other people around, just me and Rich will go for a run together. And I do feel like, yeah, I feel like I'm now getting used to running in my lenses. I'm not necessarily seeing more, as in like noticing more, I just feel maybe a little bit more confident.
Okay, good. Okay, well, that's useful. I mean, it was always going to be one of those things that would it improve you, wouldn't improve you. Mm. Wouldn't know if you tried it, but
I mean, I think there's a very big combination of, yes, now I can potentially see the hazards, but actually I've got to notice the hazards because I don't pay a lot of attention. So the eyes might be working, but the brain's still going, oh, what's that thing over there, what's going on? So yeah, I'm not really concentrating probably. So we figured out one bit, we've just got to put the rest of it together as well.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So we've got systems consciousness and systems integration. So the important bit is how to train it. So plyometrics, jump training for elasticity. It's one of the best things you can do for elasticity. Absolutely, 100%. At the time, I was running like that, and I'm not too far off that at the moment. Obviously, speed-wise, I'm not quite the same as that at the moment. But in terms of form, it's pretty much similar, because once you get the thing is, once you put the effort in and you get the form, you don't tend to lose it really, unless something drastic happens. Okay. It might go off a little bit, and I need to get back into doing more of this as elasticity as well. But I was doing a lot of elasticity training at the time. I was boxing a couple of times a week, kind of one-to-one sessions, but I was also doing lots of fast feet style exercises. I was, as part of the boxing that I was doing, we would always start the session off with 10 or 15 minutes worth of skipping. And it did take me over 2 years to learn how to skip properly. And so it's a great coordination exercise as well, but it's really good. Even if you do it without the rope, I used to do what I call ropeless skipping, mm-hmm. because you're still adding in an extra bit in here, but there's just no rope. So you're not tripping over anything. Interval training in itself, if you put the effort in interval training, same as hill training, you're starting to get that elasticity, because it's, you're getting that, having to deal with the forces, the higher forces. That's really what we want. And, you know, insanity and hit style training, insanity, showing my age there. But I was also doing a lot of insanity at that point. I went through a whole insanity program. I did two or three cycles of it. But I also designed my own hit training around that time as well, which I would give my coaching clients when I was doing that. And all of that made a really massive difference. So you've got to find the version of plyometrics that works for you. You don't have to jump off big boxes. You can find a version that works for you. You know, even just jumping up and down, pogoing up and down for, you know, 10 or 15 seconds at a time, doing 5 minutes of that, 3 minutes of that a day, would really start to put the fascia in shape for you to then to be more elastic. What that does is it makes it more energy efficient. So you're not having to pull your heels up yourself. They starts to happen much more by themselves as part of that whole momentum and energy release side of things. So in terms of joint stability, well, joint mapping exercises, as I say, is an example of the face ideas, how important it is. And that is in the Running by Design. There's a whole section on body mapping in there with some examples in there. Some really good ones that I always start people off with is squats and lunges and foot positions. So you go into a squat, and then you do, I did these in the Facebook Lives that I did during COVID. You start off in, you can do it, both in, both out, and then you have one in, straight, one out, straight, and then you switch it around. So that one's in, that one out, and then you can do both in and both out. And you just squats in all these different positions. Then you just lunges in all these different foot positions. And then you do lunges in clock positions, in different foot positions. I mean, you can spend hours doing this stuff, but you can break it down. But these are all building better predictive models, so that when you land, no matter how you land, this is particularly important for trail, your brain always knows how to react to it. So it reduces the injury risk generally, but it reduces the instances of things like ankle sprains and tweaking your calf, because your calf is having to take more of the load because you haven't trained your shin muscle. So these are really, really good for that. But then there's a whole loads of templates you can use for this, because you can do foot positions in lunges in different clock positions, different body positions, different head positions. I mean, it's almost endless to be able to do. And you think about running, you know, you're running along, you're going up that from Marshall Point 1 up to Marshall Point 2. It's still quite a few people about. So you're looking around you, your feet are doing this, feet are doing that, and your body's changing position, your head's changing position. You might be afraid to look behind you because you think, oh, I might fall over, do that. This is what all this trains for. And so it just makes you feel safer. You don't have to consciously think about catching yourself all the time because your body just does it. You know, you could pirouette up there. And then doing ankle, knee, hip and pelvic circles. So we're getting a bit of cerebellar work in there as well, which you're obviously, you're also getting when you're doing any of the HIIT style training. It's quite good for coordination. So it's good cerebellar training as well. But doing anything in circles or figure of eights, making it complex, you're doing cerebellar training. So you're doing that coordination, timing, training as well as doing the ankle, as well as doing the body mapping. And these, for me, are probably the main areas I would want to do with somebody, particularly starting off, ankle, knee, hip and pelvic circles and figure of eights and things like that. And always start people off with these areas. Tense, relaxed training. Again, really important. So doing whole body tense release where you're standing there and you're building up all this tension, then you're letting it go. Because creating tension is a skill, but it's the one that most people are quite good at doing. Creating relaxation, on the other hand, people are very poor at doing. And you should be able to, in my view, when you're running, even running at speed, have everything relaxed except the muscles you need to work at that particular point you need to work. Okay, so I had a bit of an issue with my left calf, nerve related mainly, but I've worked a lot on it, is that it would hold some tension throughout the whole gait cycle. That was a bit exhausting. So I would, you know, particularly marathon training, you used to end up with quite sore calves. And that's because it's always holding tension. So if you're sore after a run, quite often it's because you're just holding too much tension the whole time. You need to be more relaxed. And that's a skill you have to learn. And then you need to, you can do specific tension training. So, you know, you take a bicep, you do contractual work, and then you've got release work. And then the idea with the release is for however long you held the contraction for, you want to hold the relaxation for at least twice as long, if not three times as long. So if I were to contract my bicep as hard as I could, maybe give it a bit of assist and then relax it, I want to be thinking about that muscle relaxing, everything about it relaxing. So I'm not having to create any tension. And in fact, even in my shoulder, even though I'm holding my arm up, there's going to be a little bit of contraction there, but there's no tension. There's just enough contraction to hold my arm up. I'm not keeping it tense to be able to do that. When we feel threatened, when we don't have good stability, we start to create tension. Okay. And then we can do what's called contractile mapping, which is this specific thing we can do. And some of that is in the membership as well. And then we can be very specific about the cerebellum training. Again, refer to the course that's in there where we do our, you know, piano fingers and getting really good at piano fingers, finger circles, just starting with the basics, really. You can do figure eights. But then we get on to doing things like thoracic spine, you know, things like this, where we're moving side to side. We can do that in circles or you can do it in figure of eights. So what we're doing now is we're doing thoracic mobility exercises whilst we're doing cerebellum work. So I'm all about stacking, because the more you can stack stuff up to an individual's threshold, the better, the faster results you can get. And this is all the stuff you kind of won't get on the internet when you look at running technique. Yes, you want to get high cycling heels. Well, how do you do that? Well, you just have to do lots and lots and lots of drills. You can, but if you've got, you know, if you're not very good in some of these areas, those drills are not going to help you, because you're going to find it very difficult and very, demotivating, because you just won't be able to do it. So what most people do is they don't bother and they end up with those feet that we saw at the very beginning in that scissor kick style. Questions?
Yes, we do have questions. First question is, how do you train your shins, please?
Ah, okay. So training your shins, there are a couple of ways you can do that. You can do plantar flexor and dorsiflex and plantar flex exercises. So literally having your foot down and you're putting your toes up towards your shin, mm-hmm. and then putting it down again. Up towards your shin, putting it down again. Okay, and you can turn your foot and you can do it at different angles, so you're hitting the different areas of the shin muscle.
Excellent. Okay. Well, that's nice and straightforward. We like this. Yep. So yes, I should have sent my other questions in. Fun thing that's happening on my runs at the moment is that my feet are going numb. So usually About 3K in-ish, and I've not run the entire time. I've run, walked. And I'm trying not to do my shoelaces up too tight, but for the life of me, they just go numb. And then when I finish the run, they come back to life and are absolutely fine. And it only seems to be probably the last maybe 4 weeks, possibly. So I think my brain is trying to convince me not to run, and it's chucking another thing at me. So what would we do for numb feet, please?
Okay, well, it sounds nerve-related.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe vibration-related as well, because when you're running, when you hit the ground, there's a lot of vibration that goes on. So it could be there's a lack of tolerance. Are you particularly ticklish feet-wise?
Not massively, a little bit, kind of, I would say average, but then I don't know if there is an average. Yeah.
It'd be interesting to, if you've got a massage gun,
mm-hmm.
try it on the soles of your feet and try different depth, strength, you know, hardness.
Yeah.
And just see, does that make your feet go numb?
Ah, okay, and, yeah.
And different speeds, different depths. See if that might just give an indication as to whether vibration is the issue. If it is, then we'll have to have a think about how we can make that. We'll be doing some neuromechanic drills, some nerve drills. It could just be that under pressure, you've got some nerve. The nerve sheaths aren't gliding as well from a mobility perspective, either around your pelvis area or somewhere running your back. Mm-hmm. And so running because of that compressive force, it's just taking enough of the signal out that it's not the full proprioceptive feedback is not coming through, or sensory feedback is not coming through.
So it's, and because I wondered if it's like maybe because it's like almost halfway through and whatever part of me is not very happy about things, that it's just got a bit tired and gone, we'll stop now. And I'm like, well, I'm halfway round, so can't stop. Have to carry on.
Yeah, and you're probably right. It comes in partway through. It would be fatigue related somewhere. So part of the system, whatever part of that system it is fairly under fatigue. So if there's an area that's failing that is then leading to slight compression of a nerve, that's where you might get it. So it could be a number of things, but it's a good, interesting problem to solve. And there are some things we can definitely try in order to help that out. But I would definitely try the vibration on the feet to start off with, and then some neuromechanic drills that I can give you to try to see if that will help with that.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you very much indeed. Do we have more questions? Yes. Yeah. What's the other question? No more questions? No more questions, apparently, from here. That was definitely the main one for me.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll just Try the vibration of the feet first. Let me know, and then and that will give me an idea, and then we can look at neuromechanic drills for you.
Thank you, and I will do the gait videoing as well for you. I'm not going to put a deadline on it, but I will definitely try and do it before we have one of our next calls. And then yes, you can see how my I do not have high cycling heels. But then I don't think I ever have. Like, I'm sure when we were working together before, I had mildly high.
We did work on that. We did do quite a few drills for that and stuff at the time. Yeah. But I think, And there are lots of reasons why people don't have the high cycling heels. Most of them is because they can't do it, because something's not right neurologically in terms of balance or stability or something like that. And the next bit is they've been taught it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the drills come in. So you have to have the base, you have to be able to do it first of all, and then you need to be able to then do the drills to actually help you achieve that.
Mm.
And a lot of people miss out the first bit, they go to the second bit, they get demotivated and they go, well, it's just not working for me, so I'm not going to bother. I was there once, exactly the same.
Yeah.
I look back at photos because my very first Bournemouth Bay Half Marathon, well, the one and only time I ever done Bournemouth Bay Half Marathon, which was my first half. And I can see in the photographs that I wasn't far off that scissor gate type thing.
Mm-hmm.
But from that race, actually, I decided that's where I wanted to take it a bit more seriously. And that's where I started to kind of get a little bit better. Cool. So the next one we will do, we'll keep on technique, I think, because it's probably quite interesting. Hopefully a few more people. I'd like to make it more workshop based, more interactive.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I'd like that too. Yeah, I'll do the feedback form for you as well.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. I mean, I think I probably know where it's going to go, because I think my efforts are probably better focused on getting that, the new model where it will actually give you a plan,
mm-hmm.
rather than just generating more content, because I'm not sure how much of the content people are actually engaging with. Mm-hmm. So there's no point me trying to build lots and lots of content for people if they're not going to use it. I'd rather do something that people want to use and will actually make them progress from where they are.
I did listen to some of the podcasts, as in I found your podcast and put it on. I tend to put my podcasts on at nighttime, so I instantly fell asleep. So it wasn't you, it was definitely me. I did feel pleased that I managed to find it.
Good. Well, that's a start. Perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, they probably are a bit sleep inducing, I think, a little bit at the moment.
No, not at all. It's all very interesting information. And I do sometimes think, well, maybe it's just subliminally gone in, but I wake up in the morning, I can't remember anything. So I will keep trying.
It probably is a little bit, though, interestingly.
Yeah.
Because then if you kind of were to listen to it again, it would probably make a little bit more sense the next time round, because you've already heard it once, even though you were asleep.
Yeah.
So there probably is some of it that's going in. And even if you listen to it, you probably have that effect as well, because some of it, even if it's not making sense, it's kind of going in.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear it even in different contexts, it's kind of going in a little bit.
Absolutely. And I do feel like, I don't know whether it's my time of life, but I do struggle to take in information straight off. I do have to, like at work, I do have to have it 3 or 4 times for it to really sink in. I'm happy to listen to things multiple times before I can really go, yep, that I've understood that. But yes, it was another good session today, so thank you very much for putting it on and answering my questions as well.
Well, thank you for being here, and sorry about all the technical difficulties. It's really annoying me, that is, because I did it in practice 2 days ago and it worked absolutely beautifully.
Cool.
I was even watching it on the other, I've got another screen here, I was watching it on the other screen, logged into that other screen, doing, yeah, that's work, I can see that, yeah, that's really good.
It's fine. It's one of those things. We had the other phone, so we could see it. And then when you managed to slow it down as well, that was really good. So it's all fine.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I'll stitch these two recordings together somehow. And or I might just do it as part one, part two. Be easier to get it out and done, and then stitch them together. And then, yeah, next time will be, again, we'll do something on running technique. But yeah, any questions? In the meantime, fire them in. Doesn't need to be restricted to here. So that's it.
Awesome. Okay.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your time.
Thank you very much indeed.
I really, really do appreciate both of you being here.
No worries.
And yes, enjoy your time. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Chris. All right. See you again.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.